to the 24th episode of the 6th season of the Ubuntu podcast. In this episode, we're going to talk to John Spriggs and Jack Weirden about Campfire Manager. We've also got another time-saving tip and we'll read your feedback. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat facility on the website and in the IRC channel. I'm Laura, and joining me are Mark.
Hello.
Alan.
Hello.
And Tony.
Hello.
Hello. What have you been up to, Mark?
I got some pet gerbils. Right.
Are these electronic gerbils or real organic gerbils?
Organic gerbils, yes. Homegrown, not homegrown. Yeah. You know what I'm getting at. The little fluffy ones that run around in a tank and dig.
A tank.
In a tank.
Army gerbils.
Yeah.
Are they underwater?
Oh, not a tank.
Underwater
like a
gerbils.
You know what I mean. A gerbilarium.
Right.
Right.
Okay. I know what that means.
This is far too technical for me already.
Yes.
So, Alan.
I'm blown away by gerbilarium. I switched to GIFGAF.
Yay!
Welcome aboard. Now we can text you for free.
Yeah.
And phone as well.
And phone. Oh, yes, yeah, well, you know.
Not that any of you have ever phoned me ever, I don't think.
I think I have.
I think you might.
I think you phoned me lots of times in Brussels.
Oh, yeah, that was fun.
I think I've phoned you when we've been on the way to somewhere and late.
Yeah, that's
possibly Og Camp.
Yeah, so I phoned up my Orange, who I was with, and said, hey, I've seen this GIFGAF thing where I can get cheaper phones and cheaper phone tariff and more data.
Were they nice and neutral and balanced about GIFGAF?
No, they gave me some spiel about how GIFGAF was terrible because they don't have proper customer service, and if it goes down, there's nothing you can do. And
all they've That's got, exactly what I had when you? I switched to GIFGAF.
All they've got is a website. I'm like, well, it works all right for me.
Did you tell him about your job?
Well, the thing is, the Orange website doesn't even work anymore. They've got an advert that pops up that causes the whole thing to grey, and you can't actually use the website. So I cannot use the Orange website at all at the moment. So I think I'm, you know, a bit. I think it's
GIFGAF have agents as well. Who I've used.
Right. So I've been with Orange since October 1995. I've had the same account, same phone number all that time. And they're, you know, that counts for nothing. So
they cast you out.
Yeah, they're
the
like,
wind.
Yeah, whatever. So I'm like, okay, cheerio then. Bye.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I wrote a blog post about my experience of leaving Vodafone in the same way.
Excellent. Oh, yeah, I might do that. Yeah, that'd be a good idea. That'd give me an excuse to embed my GIFGAF referral code.
Yeah, I did that too. Tony, what have you been up to?
I've launched a new charity project that I'm working on.
Charity.
I don't like to talk about it. But
all right.
But I'm going to because I want your money. I'm doing a fundraising thing for Malawi, which a charity called the Amica Trust, which supports better healthcare in Africa. I'm doing a stupid thing, which is climbing the highest mountain in southern Africa.
I don't think that's the stupid part.
Isn't it? No. What's the stupid?
That's one of the very many stupid things that Tony does.
Have I missed the small print somewhere? Is there something else involved?
The stupid part is the things that bite you.
Malaria country. It is malaria country. I get quite badly bitten in this country.
Yeah. He has Amazon level insect repellent in this country.
Yeah.
Wow. In Lancaster.
Yes. I'm going next year. To climb up this mountain. So I've got about 10 months to raise the money that I need to raise in order to kind of qualify to go on the trip. I'm doing that through Virgin Money, and I'm going to put a link in the show notes so that people, if anybody wants to support me in doing this, you can. If you can chuck in a couple of quid, I'd be very, very grateful. If I don't reach my target, you know, eventually, you're not going to hear the last of it.
How are you going to motivate people to give you money other than, you know, guilt tripping and then spamming them on Twitter? How are you going to do it?
Well, I'm stupidly climbing this mountain, so if that isn't motivation enough, I will be doing...
I'm in.
At the moment, I've got some spare tickets to the BFI's screening of the Doctor Who, the Ninth Doctor stories, Bad Wolf and Parting of the Ways, and there's a prize draw going on. If you donate in the next week and a half or so, you can be eligible for going to prize draw for those tickets. So you can go along and see that screening and see some of the
conditions apply.
So
yeah.
That's in London.
I donated earlier today, so... If you want to make sure that I don't get those tickets, then you should also donate.
Yeah, if you want to disappoint Alan, donate.
It's very easy. It's very cheap and easy to disappoint me.
Yes.
By giving Tony some money for charity.
Yes.
So do that.
I'll be very grateful for any support anybody can give me. There'll be a link in the show notes. Laura, what have you been up to?
Got good broadband.
Ooh. Good broadband.
I could do with some
of that. It's more than good. It's 35 meg down.
Wow.
8 meg up?
8 meg up. I think
we're going to have to put that to good use.
Yes. Might get blocked, so just be careful about that.
No, it's all right. I can't access that anyway.
We've got fibre to the cabinet.
Wow.
Yeah, fibre to the cabinet. BT Infinity.
Mm.
And it's fast.
Wow. So we're going to do maybe hang out on a future episode?
Yeah, we could try that, yeah. See if people want to see our faces as well as listen to our voices.
Yeah, I can't think why.
You'd have to shave though, Alan.
No, my webcam's not that good.
It'd just be a blur.
Yeah.
Blue tack over it, it'd be fine. Awesome. Excellent. Let's get on with the show. On the line now are John Spriggs and Jack Weirden, who are going to talk to us about Campfire Manager. So, John, you're otherwise known as John the Nice Guy, and we know from Og Camps in years gone by that you are a very nice guy. Tell us about Campfire Manager.
So, Campfire Manager is the talk scheduling software that we've used at Og Camp since the second one. It's gone through a few iterations, sort of progressively getting the experience better as we've gone from year to year. And currently the one that we're focusing on is Campfire Manager version 2, which is actually Campfire Manager version 3, but that's it's all Laura's fault. But anyway,
I was going to say.
But yes, it's software that was proposed for bar camps and unconferences in general. But because of the fact that I'm an avid Og Camp attendee, I've only missed one, and that was because you held it too far away from me when my son was very small. So it's kind of it's evolved very much to work well with the Og Camp environment. That isn't to say it's not a good talk scheduling software for other events, but you know it's great for Og Camp.
So how do people actually use it on the day?
So again, we've gone through a few iterations. It used to be that it was predominantly designed for sort of use with text messaging, and you know there'd be one or two static stations at the event. As we've kind of gone through over the years, it's kind of become more and more obvious that whilst the SMS stuff is an interesting niche, realistically what people are now using is those smartphones with lots of internet connectivity that they've got in their pockets.
So
predominantly around the event you'll have lots of screens, or a few screens depending on the size of the event, with the big view of the event, and the intention is that as you as a participant are looking to see which talks to go to, you look at this timetable, which looks like a normal, you know, any sort of grid. It's like a normal bar camp grid, and you say, oh, I'd like to go to talk number one, because that's in the right room and it's at the right time and it's the right subject that you're interested in. So you get your phone out or you get your laptop out and you go to the page for the talk scheduling software. If you want to, you're not obliged to use this, but if you are interested in going to that talk, you open up yourself, you bring up the website and you say, I'd like to go to talk number one. You click a button which says attend. When you click attend, it says, you sure you want to attend this? You say yes, just because people click on things and have wacky mouses that don't do what they're supposed to do. And then you are marked as an attendee for that talk. Now, the reason why we're interested in tracking attendees is because we put the talks that have got that are more popular into the larger rooms.
It's kind of like the voting system that you do with post-it notes.
Yeah. That's quite a large part of where camp. One of the things that Campfire Manager came out from was that I went to a bar camp and I gave a talk about something that was interesting to me, and lots of people came up to the talk, so much so that the room was kind of four or five people deep outside of the room which for me, I mean, it was only a tiny room, but that was because I didn't know that my subject would be of interest to more people than were there. So I thought, brilliant. Next bar camp I went to gave exactly the same talk and thought, this was really popular at the last place I went to. Booked the main stage for it. 300 people, and I had 6 people in the audience. And so I did my very best Eddie Izzard impression, complete with the rabbit ears and everything else, and it didn't sway them over. Although I did get people coming up wanting to talk to me about it afterwards. And I thought, you know what, that's really wrong, because it meant that someone else who had a talk that was genuinely going to attract more than 6 people couldn't have the main stage, and ultimately will probably in another area of the event, like there was where somebody had released a piece of software that weekend, and they thought they weren't going to get many people coming to their talk, and they booked a bar area which is in a thoroughfare, and they were being stopped every sort of 2 minutes as somebody walked across, well, tried to push through the 25 right. deep crowd around the person to get past them.
Okay, so in a nutshell, it dynamically allocates talks to rooms based on their popularity.
Yes.
Right. and one of the problems we know we've had in the past is not just putting the right talk in the right room, the right capacity room, but also moving talks around, because obviously throughout the day and throughout the duration of an event, the number of people who've put themselves down for a talk can go up and down. So how do you deal with like moving things around and letting how does everyone know which room they're going to go to, you know, because things could move around, couldn't they?
Indeed. So we do a few things. Obviously we try and put as many boards up around the site as possible, and because they're all linked to the back end of this system,
by boards, John, do you mean big TVs
or projectors?
Okay.
Although the first non-Og Camp event that I used Campfire Manager at, we actually used jogglers.
So if you're running an unconference, the traditional method, like the simplest method you can get, is a big sheet of paper with a load of post-it notes, and people just kind of write their talk on a post-it note, stick it on a grid, and it generally happens there or then. There may be a bit of voting or a bit of kind of shuffling around, but it's kind of...
The system that I like to refer to as voting with your elbows.
Yeah. So... What's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with it, but in a larger event, you can do better. Mm-hmm. You can be more smart, and so one of the bar camps that I have also been to a few of is the Bar Camp Blackpool, and they've got 3 rooms, and you have to cross through the rooms to get from one room to the next. So if you're in a talking room A, and you think, oh, I'm a bit bored with this talk, and you go, I wonder what's in the other rooms, and you go into room 2 and the talk that's in room 2 is a bit boring, you go into room 3 and the talk in room 3 is a bit boring, you've just disturbed not one talk, but 3 talks to find out actually what you want to do is go outside for a breath of fresh air or a chat with someone.
Right.
And that's not to say that talks at Bar Camp Blackpool are boring, because they're not. But, you know, I'm not sure
that you looking at your laptop to find out whether whether you would discover the level of boredom in rooms 2, rooms B and C.
If you look at your phone and go, actually, they're talking about Doctor Who in room 3 and I'm
okay, so you could find out what they're talking about before going, okay, yeah, that makes more sense. I thought you had some kind of premonition.
Another part of it, I guess, is that if you've only got one big post-it board, then all of a sudden 200 people need to stand next to this post-it board to see what's on. And it kind of solves the overcrowding problem as well.
Okay, so we've gone through the why and what it is. What's it written in? How does it all kind of plumb together at a high level?
Okay, so it's HTTP is what you're interacting with. It uses
Telnet to an Apache server and talk HTTP. What?
It's a web system.
Thank you.
Sorry, Alan.
He's not very then,
when I said high level, I mean one step above HTTP, please.
Okay. So we use PHP and MySQL. It will then use some other systems to talk on SMS if you enable that, It will talk to a system called Joinedin, which is a little bit like Lanyard, but it's all open source and is written again by a member of the community that attends Og camps.
Is that Lorna Jones' project?
Yes. To make it easier for people to kind of experiment and play around with it, we've actually set up a Vagrant and Puppet set of scripts to bring up an instance of it if you want to sort of run it at home and test it out.
Oh, nice.
Sticks at it.
John, you started this thing. Jack,
yep.
Why did you get involved? What is your mission with Campfire Manager?
Well, it all started rather strangely. Back when I was doing A-level coursework, I decided that I could either do some rather contrived system that I would never use again, or I could contribute to an open source project. And that's kind of what I did. I'd seen Campfire Manager mentioned before in some coverage of Og Camp that I'd been watching, and heard some of it on this podcast of all places. So I decided I'd see what I could do to contribute to the project, and from there I've kind of followed on as a front-end developer. And one of the things that I'm really trying to push for is getting spangly new toys on the front end. So at the moment, anyone who's used it will have noticed we used jQuery Mobile, which is, you know, nice and big and friendly for touching with phones, what a lot of people have at events, like John said earlier. So, trying to get it to run on mobile devices and work properly and not just have to load a whole massive page, for example. Like a lot of the stuff we're trying to do now will have HTML5 application cache, so you can store all the boring scripts and images and whatever once, and the rest of it is just raw Campfire Manager data going backwards and forwards and not wasting your precious mobile bandwidth.
That sounds awesome. Pages. That's especially useful at some of the events that we've been at, including Old Camp, where people are on Wi-Fi, for example, and you know, you've got hundreds of people on a small set of wireless access points, and you're all basically hitting the same server. It kind of makes sense to make that as lean as possible.
Yeah, definitely. Because, I mean, like, there's one thing for mobile, which was a lot of what I've been reading about to get this to work. But then when you're talking, like, 400 people with a ridiculously small fraction of time to get onto the wireless before they get kicked off because someone else has jumped in, you've got to really kind of wrestle with code to make it work.
And are you having to, we get a diverse set of people at these kind of events. iPhones, tablets, laptops. Are you having to do a lot of work to make the site work across lots of different form factors and orientations and that kind of stuff?
It's kind of mitigated in one sense by jQuery Mobile, because that's designed to be progressive enhancement, I think is what they describe it as. So it'll definitely work even on the worst phones, but only the shiny stuff comes up in the top ones. And I was reasonably confident until last Og Camp, when it turns out there was a bug in iOS Chrome, but not in iOS Safari, which is very strange. So I guess nothing beats raw testing across all devices, which is one of the reasons we've got the demos up. So if people are listening and want to help, see if it works on their phone, for example, I think it's demo.campfiremanager.info or something like that. And people can try it on their phones and see if it works or not.
Oh, that's awesome.
Part of what my longer-term aim is for Campfire Manager is that it's not just a brilliant scheduling software for Og Camp, but it's a brilliant scheduling software for other events. Mm-hmm. I have reached out to a few other events to see if they'll use it, but, you know, at the moment it's very much focused on Og Camp. So, you know, things like text messaging is great for something in the same country, but if you're looking at maybe, and I'm picking a name out of the air here, we haven't got any sort of arrangement with these guys, but you know, if you were to look at something like FOSDEM or something like that, where you have developers from lots and lots of countries all turning up in the same place, they're going to be using Wi-Fi, they're not going to be using text messaging. The only time when the text messaging might be useful is if you've got a conference that's aimed at a different group of people that aren't all geeks.
Well, maybe there are some people out there who are planning a conference right now and thinking about maybe some more sophisticated scheduling software than a piece of paper with some post-it notes on it. And they should definitely give Campfire Manager a look, because we have used it for our camp for, you know, 4 of our 5 years. We've had some teething problems, but we've been proving it in the white-hot fire of, of an event.
I'll tell you something, it felt like a white-hot fire.
And, And, you know, it has some extra functionality and things that you just don't get from the old manual methods. So best of luck with it. Remind us one more time what the URL is to find out more information, John.
So Campfire Manager is available at campfiremanager.info, which links to the GitHub repositories. It gives you a bit of an overview. And we do have a demo system that is up and working right now at demo.campfiremanager.info.
So people should go and test it.
Please do.
Magic.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much indeed for talking to us this evening, gents. And
thanks, both of you.
Best of luck, and we'll hopefully see you at OggCamp this year in October.
In October. Looking forward to it.
Excellent.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye.
It's time for another command line love.
Oh, yeah.
And this time it's...
You weirdo.
This time it's come from listener Jack Franklin on Twitter.
I'm not certain he's a listener, but he is on Twitter. Okay. I follow him on Twitter and he posted this and I thought, oh, that looks useful.
Okay.
Let's say he's a listener.
He is.
Hi, Jack, if you're listening.
Hi, Jack Franklin.
Yep. Anyway, the command is FC.
That's fortune
cookie, isn't it?
Yeah.
Football club.
No?
No. What does it do, Mark?
So say you've written a command and you want to run the same command, but you want to do something slightly different. So you want to do a find and replace, or you want to do, you know, a bit of editing on it, which is, and if you're like me, if you're used to Vim, then you can do some quite advanced editing quite quickly. But if you're just pressing up and then editing it on the command prompt, it's a bit of a hassle because you've got to, like, you know, scroll back through your command and type your bits and delete your bits, and you can't do, you know, the kind of things you can do in Vim. So what happens if you type FC, it takes your last command, opens Vim or whatever you've got set to your default editor if you don't like Vim, so it could be Emacs or Nano or whatever, or Gedit, and then it puts your last command into the editor and you edit it and then you save and you quit and then it runs the edited version.
Oh, it runs it after you quit?
Yes.
Mm. Oh, that's interesting.
Yes. Mm.
So not scary.
Well, only as scary as typing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I tried it and it showed, in my case, it used Nano as the editor. It brought it up. You could, you know, showed you the command. You can tweak it a bit. You hit exit and it goes away and runs that command.
Huh.
So if you have got a very large, complex command, I can see there'd be a different advantage in being able to
that. It could also be useful. I found sometimes when I'm SSH'd into some random box, or sometimes when I'm connected to my phone running Ubuntu Touch, sometimes the terminal gets a little bit screwy, and when you go back and forward, it doesn't wrap around properly
especially
and it overwrites
itself. Yeah, if you've gone further, then it'll just, like, too many columns.
Yeah, and if I try and edit, and I end up, as I'm typing, it's overwriting the wrong bit of the command. Yeah. So if I could open that in a terminal, the previous command I did, that'd be super useful.
Mm. The good news is it seems to be part of the core Ubuntu install. It was just on my machine already.
Yeah,
so.
I think it's a built-in.
Cool. A bash built-in.
I think so. Mm. I'm not certain of that.
Excellent. Yes, it must be, because I just did which FC and it returns nothing. Mm. So it must be built-in.
Fantastic. Well, that's a very good command line love.
Yeah. It's now time for your feedback. We asked on our Facebook page, are you getting an Ubuntu Edge? If so, why? If not, why not? And you said...
Sorry. Mike Mombarg said, not going to get it, too expensive for me right now.
It's fair enough.
Peter Adams said, I'm not paying that price for one, but I've just put in a request for one in a letter to Santa and threw it in the fire.
Good luck, okay,
is that where I've been going wrong?
Sean Tilly, that's cool.
We have interviewed Sean on the show.
Yeah, I want one, but there's no way I can afford it.
There's a pattern here.
Ian Farrell, who we interviewed, said, I'm signed up, did it almost straight away. I'm excited and really hope it hits the target.
Me.
Bruno Guerin, said, because I want one and I need a new phone anyway.
That's a reasonable excuse.
It is. Shane Fergan says, nope, can't really afford it right now, but we'll probably get whatever random Ubuntu phone is out at the launch instead, so I don't think I'm going to miss much. It's a cool phone, though, and I would probably have bought it if I had the money.
Mm-hmm.
And Simeon Cool said, yes, because it's an awesome device, and I simply want it.
Wow.
Interesting.
Interesting range, mix of things. Hmm. Lots of people saying it's very expensive, which it is.
It's funny that Ian's saying he signed up almost straight away. When we knew it was going to launch, myself and Jono were out in Portland in the hotel, and we were getting our laptops online, knowing that it was going to go live at 1600 UTC. And we wanted to get our cards out and get ourselves signed into Indiegogo so that one or either of us would be the first one to to bag the phone. But we both ended up having kind of weird credit card and PayPal type problems, so we never ended up being one of the first.
Aww.
And while I was on the stand at OSCON, a lady called Kate came up to me and said hello and introduced herself. She works for Indiegogo, and she said, oh, by the way, I was the first one to back it.
are they going to have the numbers etched on the back?
Only for the people who've paid 10,000 for the first 50.
Right.
I don't know if the rest will have serial numbers. I did notice, actually, in the rendering, in between the volume up and the volume down button, there's a binary number.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's binary 50. I thought it might be 42, but...
That would be cool.
Someone's clearly not playing ball.
Koen from the Netherlands emailed...
I read about Canonical's Ubuntu Edge crowdfunding, and I instantly thought of another crowdfunded smartphone, the Fairphone. The people of Fairphone are producing 20,000 phones that last longer, ruining the environment less heavily, and are built by employees working under better conditions. I pre-ordered a Fairphone, and I'm interested in how Ubuntu Edge and Touch develop. Actually, I was wondering how good of a deal the Edge is compared to the Fairphone. Sure, it has better specs, but is it worth almost double the price?
Yes.
I'm happy with my Fairphone, and I hope one day it will be even fairer, not only green and social, but also transparent. Which presumably makes it harder to see. The Fairphone team have talked with Canonical about using Ubuntu Touch on the Fairphone, but currently they're using Android.
Interesting.
That'd be cool.
The Fairphone's quite... They've basically gone out and tried to source all these components ethically and sustainably. They've got this big map of, like, the whole chain of where they get stuff from and what the status is of each in terms of how well they've done in getting it how they want it. So you've got, like, green bits and red bits, depending on how much they know about where it comes from and the working conditions and the sustainability. It's really impressive.
It's funny. There's a certain set of criteria, you know, how far you go in terms of openness, transparency, and so on. And, you know, we're talking, one of the things we're talking about Ubuntu Edge is the fact that it's a very open device. You can flash it. We're not going to lock it to a particular carrier. If you wanted to wipe Android off it and put something else on there, or if you wanted to wipe Ubuntu Touch off and put CyanogenMod on there, or whatever you want to do, they're trying to make it as open as possible to modify, because it's your device. And some people applaud that. Other people say that's not far enough, and you need to have the open source bits inside your device, and the fact that you're using a DSP or a GPU or a radio that has a binary blob in it makes it an unacceptable device. Whereas other people come from the ethical sourcing point of view, like Fairphone, and say, well, it's unacceptable that you're using these materials like magnesium or sapphire or whatever in the device. And I learned that you cannot possibly keep everyone happy.
Well, you can't, and that's why the Fairphone's got this, presumably it's some kind of matrix of where things come, and so it's not going to be perfectly green or whatever. As you said, it does have red bits, but you just have to set your criteria.
Yeah.
Ed emailed eagerly, exclaiming, sorry, never mind.
I love the show. Great job. On the Ubuntu website, it doesn't seem to state the minimum hardware requirements for each Ubuntu desktop release. A lot of the Ubuntu derivatives, such as Zubuntu, clearly state the minimum hardware requirements. Can you shed any light on where I might find out this information for Ubuntu desktop releases? I know there are various third-party websites that tout this information, but I prefer to know the official stance on hardware requirements before I go doing a fresh install with a new release comes out, only to find that I have to wipe the hard drive again later and install a lighter distro because Ubuntu is too sluggish. We certainly used to have that information on the website. I don't know if during the design redesign it's been lost somewhere. But the easy thing to do is to file a bug against Ubuntu website content.
Launchpad.net/ubuntu-website-content.
And I will do that right now.
Brilliant. Well, while Alan's doing that, Mark is going to read an email from Adam Lowe, who still listens despite not using Ubuntu anymore. He now uses Arch, and he emailed to suggest,
why not give the time in Unix spoken as a binary value?
So this is the end of the show when we say what time the next live episode is going to be. And we get a bit confused because we try to give it in UTC and then British time.
And then
people.
We get complaints from people saying it should be GMT and not UTC.
Yes.
It'll
yes.
be better come October because at least there's one less.
Yeah.
Is there?
Yeah, because we don't have to worry about BST versus GMT and UTC anymore.
Yes, all become
Unix
one.
Unix time spoken as a binary value. Okay.
That sounds easy. Okay.
Alan's working it out now.
No, I'm not.
No, actually, he's reading the next email.
Hopefully.
No, maybe he's not.
Yep. And finally, the excellent, intelligent, beautiful people at linuxlinks.com have reviewed a bunch of Linux podcasts and decided which one was best.
Oh, really? Was it the that one in America?
Well,
the one that
they said was, the interlude music is catchy, the podcast is exceptionally easy to listen to, extremely engaging, and the hosts are great fun. Does that sound like a podcast?
Great fun. They sound like amazing people.
I'd really love to spend 2 hours every fortnight with them.
2 hours. Wow. Excellent.
That was really nice. They wrote a lovely review of lots of different podcasts, and they gave us 10 out of 10.
Yeah, we were the best one that they said.
Out of 20 podcasts.
Rub it in.
Yeah, we're the best of the 20 they reviewed. So thank you very much indeed, Linux Links people. That was very nice. Yeah.
We'll include a link to that.
Warmed our hearts.
Prominently on the website forever.
Yeah. The hosts are great fun.
Do we need a badge? We should get a badge.
From them or for them?
We'll just make one up.
Oh, okay.
We'll say it's from them.
We'll send them a t-shirt or something.
Okay.
Do we have
we'll put a link to the website.
Not. No, we haven't got a t-shirt and we're not going to send you one.
Okay. That's the end of your
standard disclaimer.
That's the end of your feedback.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that enthralls, exasperates, or elevates you, tweet at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. Please do get in touch. I mean it. Just one message, just to know there's someone out there who cares.
And that's it for this episode. Join us on Wednesday, the 14th of August at 19:30 UTC. That's 8:30 here.
Where here is in your earphones.
Yeah. And that's our next live episode. So 8:30 in the evening for those in the UK. Work it out if you're elsewhere. And 13765086600 for those counting in Unix time.
You actually did it. Oh my god.
That's not binary though.
No, we'll have to do that next time.
I just did that off the top of my head.
Tune in next time to watch us on a webcam. Read it out in binary.
Well, that's worth 10 out of 10, isn't it? I don't need his money. Oh, dear.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Cheers,
see you next
guys.
Time.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.